We're doing Mishlei. We're up to what's called the 13th chapter, 5th pasuk. Devar sheker yisna tzadik. Words of lies. Well, that's something the tzaddik hates. So you have those tabloids, yellow journalism. They make up things about people. They post them. I mean, when I was a kid, they had them like the Inquirer and stuff like that.
And,
had them at the checkout counter, Sun, right?
So. Adam and Eve's body found in state yesterday, right?
Part of what should happen to a person as he tries to become righteous is that he hates lies. And we saw in the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish writes that there's a tendency within man to be infatuated with lies. Things that seem almost impossible with our imagination. I'll tell you a story. A few weeks ago, one of the kids asked me about a book we had in the house. And I said, you know, I don't know how reliable that book is. I'm not sure how much you can believe. I said, there's a lot of true stuff in there, and it's worthwhile reading, but don't believe everything you read there. So he said to me, what do you mean? So I said, well, it goes like this. The kid was in his room, and suddenly he heard a rustling noise outside. It was dark, there wasn't anyone home. He started walking down the steps, he wanted to see what it was, and as he looked, he couldn't see anything. So he decided it must be nothing. He turned around and started climbing the steps, when suddenly, all the kids are sitting there like this. And I said, there was no kid. I made it up. So they're like, but Abba, what's the end of the story? I said, wait, I made up the story. There's no kid. But in your mind, you see the kid on the steps, right? Because our imagination is very quick to develop, to create. Yeah, I heard the word. Sounds nice. Great. In my mind, there's a kid. So I told you three sentences, and now there's a kid, and you want to know what happened to the kid. But there is no kid. So you get frustrated. But Abba, finish the story. Why finish the story? There is no kid. I made it up. No, you want a happy ending. Suddenly, it was his best friend. He was behind the bushes. He came out and said, I brought you a birthday gift. Great, now you can go to sleep. Right, but before I ended the story, you were dying to hear it. So then I took out the Chazon Ish off the shelf, and I showed them the Chazon Ish. I said, here's what he writes. Anytime you read a history book, you have to be careful, because the nature of man is that he lets his imagination move forward. And he likes to imagine and to connect between what he would be the perceived reality and his imagined reality. And so therefore, you have to be very careful. People like embellishing their stories. And at the end of the day, you have to wonder how much of the history books you should believe. So the Chazon Ish just warns the reader that there's a fine line between what's real and imagined. And that our nature is that our imagination charges forward with very little hindrance from the brain. As you see, like I told the kids, why do you want an end to the story? I just told you, there's no kid, I made it up. No, finish the story, right? Because your imagination wants closure. There has to be an end. Okay. Tells us Shlomo HaMelech, part of what a tzaddik is supposed to develop is that he hates lies. Devar sheker yisna tzaddik. When one is a tzaddik, it's not only that he himself behaves correctly, he should also learn to hate that which is a lie. You know what I heard? They told me a fascinating thing about Netanyahu. Everyone wants to hear some gossip. It happens to be a good thing. He went for a walk around his block. I'll just finish the story because I don't want you guys to be sitting here like my kids. Wait, finish the story. True story. I'm pretty sure it's true because the guy took a picture. This guy walks out onto his balcony on Shabbos. You understand, he wasn't Shomer Shabbos. And he's a neighbor of Netanyahu. He lives up the block. And he sees Netanyahu walking down the street, going for a Shabbos afternoon stroll. And one of his neighbors, who's a very old man, was just walking out to take out his garbage. And not only did Netanyahu go and take the garbage bag from him to put it in the bin, the guy said, wait, I want to tell you something. And he told Netanyahu that he's very bothered that he lost a lot of friends. I think it was in the Yom Kippur War. Either the Yom Kippur War or the Six-Day War. And he says, no one's taken the time to put up a wall like that for Vietnam with the names of the soldiers that are fallen. And it bothers him a lot that the names are never remembered, and very soon there'll be no one to remember it. And Netanyahu told him, okay, I'm making a note of it, and we're going to take care of it. You're right. So it's a nice story. He took the time to talk to a neighbor, took his bag of garbage. I just wanted you guys to have closure. You shouldn't sit here the rest of the class. What happened with Netanyahu? Anyways,
Netanyahu.
What?
There was no Netanyahu.
There wasn't Netanyahu. This story is true. I mean, I think it's true. At any rate, coming back to Dvar Sheker Yisnat Tzadik, V'Rasha Yav'ish V'Yachpir, and someone who's wicked is easy in embarrassing others and bringing shame to others, in spreading rumors and slander and lies. So that's one reading of the Pasuk. But there's another reading of the Pasuk. The tzaddik hates to accept lies and lashon hara. What happens when someone walks in and says, I have a juicy piece of lashon hara to tell you? So they don't present it that way. They say, you know, I heard something that's not yet public information. I don't think they want anyone to know yet, but I can trust you.
Can I trust you? Yeah, you sure.
You know, your roommates told me not to tell you, but... So... When it comes to lashon hara, as a person develops his midot, he should reach a point where he says, "I'm really sorry. I don't want to hear it." Yisnat tzaddik, the tzaddik should hate that. The rasha, whereas someone who is wicked, he's quick to hear, quick to believe, and quick to act on what he heard. The rasha yavish v'yachpir. The wicked person hears the lashon hara. He's very happy to hear it, and that's it. Oh, I'm never going to trust him again. What a slime ball. I can't believe he did that to you. No, how many times do people do that? You heard one side of the story. What's going on here? Tzedakah titzor tam darech. Tzedakah protects those who maintain a whole and honest path. Virisha tisalef chatat, and wickedness surrounds sin. They go hand in hand. The wickedness itself leads a person to stumble. So these are things we see on a day-to-day basis. Again, the pasuk in the simple reading is Tzedakah titzor, the righteousness, the charity that a person does when he is a tam darech, so that charity stands by him and protects him. Now, what's a tam darech? It doesn't say tzedakah titzor, tzedakah protects he who gives tzedakah. It says tzedakah will protect he who does things in a whole way. So there are many ways to give charity. There's giving charity and making it on everyone's billboards. Is giving charity and ensuring that everyone knows what your donation is. A tam darech, one who's whole in his path, he's not interested in the fanfare or taking it out and showing everyone how great he is. That's when the tzedakah protects a person, when he doesn't do it for the fame. Yeah?
When you were talking about wickedness before, is wickedness knowing the will of God and not doing it? Or not knowing the will of God?
Not wanting to. When you had the opportunity to learn. Obviously, if you don't know when, you never were exposed by the wicked.
Again, what was the second option?
You don't know the will of God, but you don't want to learn it.
Can I choose a choice three?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so the Talmud in Tractate Horios derives from a pasuk. It says in the pasuk, "Imru tzaddik kitov, kifri malehem or malalav yochelu. Oy lirasha ra kigmul yadav yaselo." Imru tzaddik, say about the tzaddik kitov, because it's good. because they'll eat the fruit of what they do. Woe to he who is wicked and evil. He will also get paid back in kind with his behavior. So that's the simple reading of the verse. The verse is talking about the people when they were terribly ill philosophically, where they were praising those who were wicked and deriding those who were pious. So the Navi is turning to the people and saying, Imu tzadik ki tov, tell your kids it's good to be righteous. And tell them, well, woe to you if you're wicked. That's the simple reading. Along come our sages and give us another interpretation. Our sages say, wait a second, what does it mean, say about a righteous who's good? Is there such a thing as someone who's righteous and not good? Our sages understood it to describe as two adjectives. Imru, speak about tzadik kitov, the righteous who is also good. He is righteous, he is also good. Say woe about a person who is evil, who also does bad. Wait a second. So is there a tzaddik who doesn't do good? And is there someone who's evil who doesn't do bad? So the Talmud says, you have to break down the pasuk. Tzaddik is someone who's righteous between him and God. Tov is someone who's good between him and his fellow man. Rasha is someone who's wicked between him and God. Ra is he who's wicked between him and his fellow man. Yes? Okay. So then the word Rasha means between man and his creator. And that, you're right. When I started off, I got it backwards. That's why I was going to choose the third option. Because as I was quoting it, I remember that Rasha is really between man and God. That's correct. The word Ra is between man and his fellow man. But in Mishle, I don't see this divide. Throughout Mishle and the commentaries, it certainly seems like the Rasha is evil towards his fellow man, not necessarily towards God at all. Saying every mitzvah between man and his fellow man also has God's decree behind it. But the psukim in Mishle certainly sound like the Rasha is wicked between man and his fellow man. That's what these psukim seem to be describing. So that definition in Tractate Horios doesn't seem to carry over into Mishle. Yes?
You think that anyone who sees that, what you're just saying, anyone who is evil to his fellow man would seem just to be going through the motions with the mitzvah that he does between him and Hashem. I mean, it's hard to imagine, as you said, it's so clear that Hashem has given us instructions how to behave between our fellow man. So, you know, I mean, I would question the sincerity of the piety of somebody between him and God. Maybe there are such people. If they were,
I tell you, I think we're all hypocrites to some degree.
To some degree, but at least you know you're a hypocrite, then you can at least work on it. If you think that you know that this is. Obligations, this and that. You're not going to go out of your way for someone you don't know, who's a stranger. And you talked the other day about visiting sick. It's easy to forget about it and then say, "Oh, I'm glad you're back." You know, what defines a hypocrite? But I think that his point's well taken. I mean, the idea that you can't really be serious about your relationship with God and your creatures. I don't care. Doesn't make sense, does it?
Let's discuss that. As a Q&A, because it's another topic.
Between me and Hashem, if a person doesn't know that something is an areva, he doesn't. It's less harsh for him, on him than if he knows that it's an areva, he doesn't.
That's true. We have a discussion in Talmud. We generally say that the conclusion of that discussion is that Omer Mutar. Someone thought it was permissible, Not that he went to yeshiva, wasn't paying attention, missed out on that line, but he really couldn't find out different. Every year I meet people who didn't even know they were Jewish or didn't know what Judaism is. I got an email last week from someone who wrote that until age 25, they didn't know anything about what it was to be Jewish. Zero. Blew me away. Okay. But it happens, right? So, the Omer Mutar, and definitely in the days of Chazal, it was more common. They didn't have internet then. So then that's a Tinok Shenishba. That's what Halacha describes. Someone who is not held accountable because they grew up without knowing anything. It's not their fault. So it's not that they're held less accountable, it's that they're not held accountable because they couldn't know. What do you want from a person? Now, we had a student here. He passed away, but he told me that when he was 25, he was serving in the Marines, and before one of his trips, his mother called him in and said, hey, Dave, I just want you to know, you know, you're doing dangerous things. If you die, you should know you're a Jew. He was like, huh? Ma? Well, what?
That is so common today. Oh. I got a guy I know is a Lebanese Christian, married a totally assimilated American Jew, works in Kuwait, has two boys who are Jewish, had no clue that they were Jewish. Their mother told them when they were about 19, 20, they didn't want to hear about it. After we have an obligation to say, hey, there's a place that will take you to learn. Or someone just, you know, what, that's a whole other deep question. But, you know, really, most people, if you grew up in a culture like that, you don't want to hear that you're...
Yeah, yeah. This guy covered himself with tattoos, looking for meaning in life, and suddenly discovered he's a Jew. Oh, wait, okay.
I mean, I think today, even with the internet, there's thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe. You have no clue.
Yeah. So, okay, back to our pasuk. Tzedakah titzol tam darech. Tzedakah, the righteousness a person does, protects when he's on a whole, honest path. V'rish'a tesalef chatat. And he who is a sinner, so then the wickedness itself envelops him and brings him down. So that's something which we find. We find that very often a person who... he's going to do as bad as he could. And then he goes so far, he ends up shooting himself in the leg. Okay. V'rish'ah tesalef chatat. Okay. Here we have a very important Rashi. Should I begin with the Rashi or with the story? I guess we'll begin with the story. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Brachos. It's okay, we got it here in the Ein Yaakov. Tells us in Tractate Brachos, Hahu Biryone, where these gangsters, we discussed this a few days ago, Hahu Biryone, De Havu, De Shivivuse, De Rabbi Meir. We had a bunch of gangsters who were neighbors of Rabbi Meir's, and they were bugging him and driving him crazy. So what did Rabbi Meir do? He prayed that they should
die.
Drop dead, right?
His wife didn't.
And his wife along came Bruria, right? And what did Bruria tell him?
To pray for the wickedness to go away. Go to Pasuk.
Right. She said, the verse says, Yitamu chato'im min ha'aretz. It says, sins, iniquity should pass from earth. It doesn't say itamu chotim. It doesn't say the sinners. It says the sin should pass from the planet. Okay. So he accepted what she said. He prayed they should do tshuva, and they did. Okay. That's the story. So what was her proof? Her proof was, it says itamu chatoim. It doesn't say chotim. So she says, when it says the sin, it does not mean the sinner. Okay. A nice pshat. Says Rashi over here. It says, Rish'at tesalef chatat. Wickedness will envelop and ultimately bring down the sin. Wickedness will bring down the sin. It should have said the sinner. Says Rashi, yeah, when it says the sin, it's as though it would say the sinner. So why does it say the sin? Val shehu rasha gamur. When a person is completely wicked, so then he is called the sin. That's a way of talking about a person who's completely wicked. But the idea is, wickedness takes down the sinner. Oh, wow. So Rashi just turned the Gemara on its head, right? No, Rashi was telling us pshat. Before Bruria came along, how did Rabbi Meir understand the pasuk? Yitamu chataim in haaretz. Those that represent sin. So then the... Even though he also knew it doesn't say chotim, but he understood, like Rashi just said over here. Bruria came along and did a this on him, right? She said, hey, you know, here's the drasha, and he bought it, right? He said, yeah, you're right. Yes?
Did he really not know that?
That she, drasha?
She was speaking it as in, as if it was like simple.
I don't know. There are places in Talmud where Bruria walked into the academy and argued with Rebbe also. Well, it certainly sounds like there were other times she came into the academy. Seems like she knew stuff no one else knew. Yeah, she was a very smart lady. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Zayin. Okay, this pasuk has many interpretations, and each one has their own message. Yesh mitashir ve'ein kol. I want to start with the one that's less pshat. Yesh mitashir. There are those that show themselves wealthy. Ve'ein kol. When in fact, they have nothing. I once visited a community, and after they asked me to give a shiur there, and there was one person who asked questions here and there, and I was impressed with how intelligent he was. He was the best dressed guy in the crowd. The guy was wearing such fancy suits and ties. Every class he came dressed differently, and he looked like $1 million. So I didn't want to ask, what does this guy do for a living? But as I was leaving Matzei Shabbos, he knocked on the door and asked if we could talk for 5 minutes, and turns out he's been unemployed for a decade. So once upon a time, he was a professor somewhere, but he's still dressed. No one knew. I said, maybe we should talk to people of your community. Maybe there are job openings by them. No, no one's allowed to know. He's only willing to talk to me because I'm new to town. Like, I'm not from the town. So maybe I have a lead for him. But he didn't want anyone in his neighborhood to know. So, what?
That's it.
It said
his whole identity is caught up in who he pretends to be.
So I'm just saying it's an important warning. I knew a few businessmen who wanted to get loans from the banks. This goes back before the crash of 2008. They went out and rented very expensive suits. They came in with bodyguards and cars and limousines. And you'd be surprised, people can open businesses this way too. Today I don't think it'll work, but I can tell you that clothes make the man.
You should have a decent suit. It's not saying you shouldn't, but don't go to the insanity.
I'm saying, on the contrary, if you're the bank lender, remember the pasuk. Yesh mitasher. There are those that seem so wealthy. They ain't cool, and there's really nothing behind it. Don't be quick to judge what's behind it.
You're the bank lender today with what information you have today. The internet and check his background, and you fall for a fancy suit, you deserve to get fixed.
Okay.
But there was a time.
No, but in business, you're saying that, but in business, sometimes you make transactions with people. How many times do people show up to rent an apartment and they pull out $20,000 on the spot, and you assume, wait, if the guy's got $20,000 in his wallet and he's giving me five of that up front, I'm going to have no problems collecting his rent. These are games people play.
Absolutely.
I'm saying you shouldn't fall for them. It's not only as a banker.
Right. But again, you know, it's my experience, you know, depends what you take certain risks if you have to. There's a ton of apartments available, this and that. But normally, what kind of, show me your salary history, you know, give me your returns for the last, you know.
But people don't do that.
When people come in, you've used that example. You know, I like a loan, okay, show me who's going to co-sign and this and that.
Right.
But if I want to make a society with you and I'm looking for angel investors and you are well-dressed, you will catch attention.
I felt bad for the guy, the unemployed professor, so I'd say, yes, I can understand how you need a suit.
Maybe you're
saying, be smart, there are a lot of con men out there and people who... you know, feel that if they can pretend that they're something, they're deluded enough to believe maybe they are. And if they can delude you, you're in the hook. You're in trouble. That's good advice.
Conversely, cool. Off the other side of the coin, the people who, as Shlomo Melech says, act poor, they too, because they're, I don't know, they might not give tzedakah or...
Wait, that's the next part. Mitroshesh, sometimes you have people who seem so poor, v'hon rav, and they're super wealthy.
Oh,
I had people like that next to me on the bus today.
That's also
like, these people get on the bus, and they seem like, whatever, like not well-to-do at all. And I'm sitting down, and I'm trying to learn. I was actually with the laptop, I was trying to write. And then their grandson sits next to them. And they tell him the following story. They say, you won't believe what happened to us last week. And I'm trying not to listen, but you know people sitting opposite you? They said, we were driving home. They live in South Africa. And we pulled out of the house, and a gunman stopped the car. And they pulled us out of the car. And your grandfather wasn't sure what they wanted. They pointed to his watch. And he said, you could have my cell phone, you could have the car. This watch has sentimental value. They said, we don't want the cell phone, we don't want the car. We want your watch. So he had no choice, he gave him the watch. And then the grandmother says to the grandson, you know that watch was worth $250,000. That was his Rolex. I didn't.
The next inquire ourselves. You want to learn all that? Boom.
I didn't know they made watches. I didn't know Rolex has $250,000 watches. I didn't. That was news to me. Like, okay, wow. So you see these two people dressed simply, like mamash. We were standing at the bus stop together. Your example. Someone came and collected tzedakah, and I felt bad for them. You know, these guys are sitting next to me at the stop. They certainly. I'm not sure who needs it more, them or the guy collecting. Yeah, right. They just lost their $250,000 Rolex. I feel bad for them, but mitroshesh.
Well, I once got invited back in Antwerp, and this guy, he invited me on the spot, but I was a bit embarrassed that he invited me. I thought maybe he doesn't have enough food at home. And I got to his place, and it was like a palace, like everything, like with golden faucets and stuff, like everything marble and granite, like.
He was a chassan. They were asking what watch he wanted for the wedding.
Right.
I was wondering, like, was he supposed to get that one? Yeah.
In that situation where, like, Sadaka preferences. Do we give preference to somebody who, let's say two scenarios, one person who's poor, uneducated, who didn't really have a shot, and then there's somebody who had money, but financial mismanagement led them to the predicament that they're in, where they blow it on stupid things and are made poorly constructed decisions. Do we need to preference somebody above the other?
I am unaware of either one of those being direct factors. There are other factors that can stem from that, like a person's level of need, etc. But that, if you want, remind me when we go to the Q&A later tonight. We'll get back to that.
Okay. Can you remember me, please, the central point of the discussion? Because
yes, the pasuk is saying, don't judge what you see externally. Yesh mitasher, there's a guy who seems super wealthy. Then kol, there's nothing behind it.
Yes.
Then you have mitroshesh, you have a guy who seems super poor. Vehon rav, and behind it is tremendous wealth. So that's the first understanding in the pasuk. No, he's saying in general, you meet someone, don't assume you know who you're talking to.
Is there a middle who you must trust in? Because you
let's see. As we go on, we'll see. Generally, Shlomo HaMelech keeps telling us not to trust. Keeps telling us, don't fall for things. So the first understanding of the pasuk is, don't assume a person who seems wealthy is. Don't assume a person who seems poor is. Neither one. Okay, that's number one. The second understanding here is, yesh mitasher, you have people who become super wealthy, vein kol. And initially in life, they had nothing. Don't assume you see someone who's poor that they'll always remain that way. You never know. Sometimes you have someone who has very humble beginnings and they will be mitashel. And then you have mitroshesh, people who become completely impoverished, v'hon rav, where initially they had tremendous wealth. Someone once gave me the book by, what's his name? The billionaire in New York who built buildings, what's his name? Trump, right. Someone gave me his book. So I read it in the bathroom a few times. I got sick of his infatuation with himself and I gave it back to the person. But he had an interesting line there. He describes how he was once so heavily in debt. It was the middle of the night when there was the housing crisis and the Japanese bankers of Citibank called him up in the middle of the night and they said, now come down to a meeting. And it was a freezing cold night and the office they had to meet in was only a few buildings down from one of his estates. So he didn't put on a coat and he just went out of the building and went out. And on his way he saw a beggar. And the beggar extended his hand to him and he looked at the beggar and he thought to himself, he doesn't realize he's better off than I am. He's at zero. I'm at minus I don't know how many million. So that...
His daughter is an Orthodox Jew, you know.
I did not know that.
When my town was there, his daughter is a converted Orthodox full from Jew.
Oh, right, and he went out against her publicly. Sure.
He was a marshal in the Israel parade. Because in the real estate business, as you know, there are a lot of Jews who always seem to be perceived as very friendly to Israel and Jewish.
So,
I doubt it. Anyway, what do you say that for? No. How is that?
No.
Jewish.
We were just talking about Lashon Hara.
Third pshat, yesh mitasher. There's a person who's wealthy, and he made it all off of the poor. Ve'ein kol, and then Shlomo HaMelech is telling him, you should know, that's wealth that will end up a person, he will end up with nothing. And mitroshesh, then you have a person who's always on the brink. He seems impoverished, but it's because he keeps helping the poor, the hon rav, and then he should know there's tremendous wealth waiting for the person. So that's the third pshat Rashi gives us. Now, I would have said a fourth pshat, which Rashi doesn't say. And the other commentaries say it, and I think that's much more pshat in the pasuk. So Rashi gave us three pshatim. Either there's a guy who seems wealthy, and there's a guy who seems poor, and the guy who seems wealthy is really poor, and the guy who seems poor is really wealthy. Don't judge things by their externals. That was one pshat. A second pshat is, just because a person is wealthy doesn't mean he'll end up wealthy. Sometimes you have super wealthy people who end up with nothing. Sometimes you have super poor people who end up with a lot. And the third pshat is, well, it depends on how a person made his wealth. You have the people who made their wealth by exploiting the poor. Shlomo HaMelech warns they will end up with nothing. You have the people who always use their wealth to help others, and that's why they seemed poor. So you should know they have a lot of wealth waiting for them. Those were the three pshatim of Rashi. But I think the pshat that to my mind is a simpler pshat in the pasuk, Yesh mitasher, you have people who become very wealthy, ve'ein kol. And he had nothing to start with. And that's the story of many people who came and became super wealthy. The generation that came after the Holocaust, a lot of them became very wealthy. A lot of the Jews that came out of the Holocaust in many countries, in Antwerp, in the United States, in Israel, all over. You have a lot of people, Yesh Mitasher, you have a lot of people who became very wealthy, Vein Kol, and they had nothing starting to start out with. Mitroshesh, and then you have people who actually became completely impoverished, Vehon Rav, and they initially they had tremendous wealth. So that I think is the simple reading of the pasuk. I don't know why Rashi didn't quote that interpretation. And that's a very important warning to us. It gives us an encouragement that don't assume you can't make it to the top. If that's where you want to go, there are people who made it there with very little. And then you have people who are confident in their wealth, and they shouldn't be confident in their wealth either. I met someone, I didn't even realize it was serious. Twice I met people who owned so many buildings, you know. Like one of them once told me, I go to sleep at night, I wake up in the morning, he said, why do I love real estate? He was trying to convince me to invest in real estate. He said, I go to sleep at night, I wake up in the morning, I didn't do anything, and I made $50,000. Boom. Okay, he's got a point. There's that advantage.
It doesn't have to go that way. Right. The real estate is great.
So he told me, he said, you know, making money takes a lot. It takes, you know, you need mazel, but losing it can happen in a flash. He said, you know, people don't realize how fast you can come down. Which was surprising to me. I mean, you're talking about a man who owns buildings and malls all over the world. Like, how fast does he really think he could come down? He owns malls, he owns buildings in Midtown Manhattan. I don't know. Each building is $10-15 million. But he said, be surprised how fast you could come down. Okay? Shlomo HaMelech said it before him. Mitroshesh, people can become completely impoverished, v'hon rav, even though they came from tremendous, tremendous wealth. Then nothing can give you confidence.
You gave the Holocaust stories. I mean, how many people you saw who in Germany were living very high, came to the States and dreamt of a new clean floors and stuff. Because they didn't stay clean floors for long. I mean, they got themselves, Baruch Hashem, together again. But we saw it in that generation. People who lost everything. You weren't allowed to leave with anything if you were lucky enough to leave.
Yeah, you're saying, okay, war can change things, right?
And you just said, you know, real estate, how much is leverage?
Right. That's also true. Okay. Tov, we have to do one more pasuk because that's a concluding pasuk to the previous thought, and then we'll take a break for a few minutes. Kofer nefesh ish oshro. A person's wealth is really, how would you translate the word kofer? Redemption money. Is the redemption money for one's soul? Verash lo shama gara. Okay, there are many interpretations to that part of the pasuk. Let's first understand the first part, and then we'll see the second part. One understanding is if you use your money for tzedakah, so then all your money was used to redeem your soul. A person has wealth, the question is, what does he do with it? That wealth can actually be the redeemer of his soul.
What do you mean redeem his soul?
That means that if his soul has other sins and he deserves punishment, what's going to redeem him from all that is the charity that he does. You know, a guy has a lot of money. So in heaven they say, okay, what'd you do with all that free time? How much good did you do? What'd you do with the time you had? What'd you do with the money you had?
When all that is, I've heard that said a lot, that there's, you know, like in the merit of this, like this will happen, in the merit of that, that will happen. But does that mean, you know, after that, in the world to come, that you no longer have that card to play? That you did charity that one time, that you helped the old lady cross?
It seems that way, right? Seems that way. You used up your chips, right?
Okay.
Even though sometimes we say it's not the full mitzvah, it's only a benefit of the mitzvah, it's not the mitzvah itself. But, v'rash lo shama gara, when is one's charity meritorious? When the impoverished were not shamed, they were not yelled at. Sometimes a guy comes and he pleads with you and says, you know, I really need your help. And you say, leave me alone, come on, I know you're fake. And then the guy says, I'm not a fake, I'll show you my paperwork, it's for real, come see. And ultimately you realize he's for real and you give him the money. Well, you should know you already lost a lot of what you might have gained from that mitzvah. Because kofer nefesh ish oshro, Shlomo HaMelech says, when is one's tzedakah going to redeem his soul? V'rash lo shama gara, provided that the poor man didn't get yelled at. So that's a food for thought. It's also quoted in Halacha and Shulchan Aruch that we have to remember that at least as important and sometimes more important than the money we give to charity is the smile with which we give it. Because a lot of people give a shekel here, a shekel there, but if you smile and you make the guy feel good, that's worth even more. And the Shulchan Aruch goes beyond that. It's a Halacha, it's a Gemara, that sometimes you can't give him money, but you could give him a warm feeling by smiling at him. And that's another level of tzedakah, making him feel good.